American media is a business, and it has a mission. Not to inform Americans, but to entertain them.
You know, there's happy news for happy people with happy problems.
And the business leaders said that they had to renew with vigor what they called the everlasting battle for the minds of men and indoctrinate citizens with a capitalist story.
Global corporations feeding us the news as they see fit.
Truth is subversive. It's anti-American.
Americans have computers in school, dozens of TV stations, and the most aggressive news media on Earth. Does that mean they're better informed? Hardly.
And now, for Newsreel, here's Sean Kennedy.
And a good day. This is Sean Kennedy reporting to you from the internet for Friday, February 25th, 2005. This would be Newsreel, your source for independent media, and I would be Sean Kennedy, your host, while giving you the source for independent media. Maybe think of me as like your very own sort of gatekeeper, kind of delivery boy. I'm the mail boy. You know, I've got the little card. I come around. I bring the news that you need to get to keep you from getting enslaved by core political tyranny. Now, if you don't happen to believe that core political tyranny is trying to enslave you, then I suggest you turn off the television and take a look around at what's really going on in the world, because there's a lot of crazy shit that's happening. You can read along with me by going to my live journal, live_journal. Well, it's livejournal.com, but then it's Sean underscore Kennedy. And you know it'll be time to turn the page when you hear me say something like, oh my God, I can't believe I made it through another week. Gotta say, I'm feeling like hammered shit today. I've got the radio voice in full effect. Why, you may ask? Because I am an old man. I am officially 31. I turned 31 back in October, but I figured, you know, it's been a long time since I had a beer and some hard liquor. So the other night they had a bonfire outside. You know, we live out in the rural sticks out here in beautiful Nordic British Columbia. So we took the dog sleds, you know, and we went out to this little area where we had a bonfire. And somebody gave me a gin and tonic. So I'm like, okay, no problem. And I'll just drink this gin and tonic. I'm all cool. No problem. And then somebody gave me a beer after I had the gin and tonic. Now, the beer was a Granville Island maple cream ale, which is not a bad beer. I mean, it tastes all right. I'm not a real big beer guy. But for some particular reason, those two particular... Now, it wasn't a gin and tonic, actually, to be totally fair. It was gin and another kind of lemon-limey drink that's like 7-Up, but it's not 7-Up. That's Sprite. Who knows? You know, I'm not giving them a plug. Because I'm telling you, don't do that. Don't drink beer, gin, and Sprite. Just don't do that. That's a bad, bad idea. And I knew this, you know? It's like... What is it? Beer before liquor? You never been sicker or whatever is it? Don't drink beer. Just don't drink. Just don't drink, man. Like, there's better drugs to do than alcohol. I mean, when you look at all the pain that alcohol causes in our modern society, wow, I don't know what I was thinking. Why did I do that? But now, feel a little bit like hammered shit. I woke up this morning and I had like hot and cold flashes going on. I'm like, oh my God. And of course, I couldn't get down to get my general, you know, you need the Gatorade Powerade drinks. You need like a blue one. It has to be blue. And a vegetarian submarine sandwich, and that'll put you back together again. But I didn't have that on my particular soiree, so I loaded up on vitamins and ate some juice and some fruit and tried to, you know, choke myself into it. And here we are doing the news for you. So a little personal feedback there. I'm really, really glad that I am feeling better, because let me tell you, these hangovers, man, I think they're getting worse. You know, have you noticed that? Hangovers back in the 80s weren't like this. The new hangovers are just, like, nasty. Maybe there's something else going on in the booze. You ever think about that? Like, what are they putting in the beer? Never mind the water. What are they putting in the beer? My God. I mean, you're supposed to be getting, you know, all kind of high anyway when you're drinking. That's the whole plan, right? We all go to our shooting galleries. We all go to our little crack houses called pubs, and we get horribly, horribly drunk in order to keep, you know, the rats in the cages and keep them kind of complacent. That's sort of what beer parlors are for, aren't they? I mean, really. So, you know, you got to wonder, what are they putting in the booze? Things that make you go, Anyway, on to some feedback here. Feedback, dear Sean Kennedy, I just watched Patrolling episodes 1 to 9 in order. Well, I'm glad you watched them in order. Afterward, I was speechless. I'm sitting here contemplating whether or not you're insanely fucked in the head or you're a fucking genius. Well, I'd put it to you that actually all fucking geniuses are insanely fucked in the head. You can take from that what you want. Maybe genius is the wrong word. I would say so. This isn't about being a genius. It's something else. More like a guy with a clue. Well, it could be argued that your guy with a clue is another person's genius. It's good stuff. It makes more sense than anything I've heard, read, or been unwillingly subjected to in a long time. I'm totally going to use it. I've already burned several copies of the series for friends, and I've asked them to give it to another person when they are done and ask that person do the same. Keep up the good or insanely fucked work, Jay. Well, thank you so much. Thank you so very, very much. And it's hard, you know. I mean, it's easy in the early stages of looking at WOGDM, you know, to put up patrolling and stuff like that. And, you know, you talk about gear and kit and ratios and stuff like that, how to pack your gear, how to roll clothing, how to do all that stuff. All that stuff is old school, tried and true, tried and tested wisdom, which I'm able to bequeath unto the world because, you know, I didn't make any of that shit up. I just happened to learn it because, you know, I'm a freak and I pick up this kind of stuff. And now there's like, you know, there's like WOG World, and there's a couple other, there's another dude who's got a WOG website whose name escapes me. He's got a big paw print on it there, and he's doing his thing, and we're all kind of moving along. I have no affiliation with any of these other sites, you know. It's important that we understand it's a concept and a mentality, and by default, any WOG, if they go to, no matter what site they go to, we should all be able to get along and see things the same way. Not because, you know, it's all about conformity, just because, well, the reason why we think the way we do is not because, you know, based on all these little opinions and stuff like that. It's a lot of it is just difference engine stuff. You have to look at it and go, what are the pros, what are the cons, and then figure out where you're going with that. And that's kind of the WOG way. And it gets a little awkward when you start getting into really heavy moral issues, you know, like children, child rearing, you know, death penalty, all that kind of stuff. Gets a little hairball, you know, not everyone's going to agree. And that's where people have to agree to disagree, because everyone's different, everyone's got different body types. Therefore, what's good for one person in the way of, like, boots or backpack is not good for another person in the way of boots or backpack. So why would a belief system be, you know, universally accepted? Of course, everyone's different, so everyone has to, you know, be compatible, but different. So, you know, just a thought. Moving on here. Dear Sean, Newsreel needs an elite investigation group of five or so people, like a LERP team. Newsreel LERP team. Hey, there you go. There's a name for them. Or Newsreel LERP patrol. That way we get patrolling in there, too. Yeah, I don't know. Something to think about. Maybe if we could do some research into, like, those five-man operative teams. Ooh, an operative team. That'd be good. Newsreel needs an elite investigative group of five or so people that when something important comes up, such as the recent vitamins become prescription scare, information will become available immediately. A small group working together will accomplish much quicker than random listeners. I don't know if I agree with that, but I'll get back to that. People will be called, dumpsters picked through, secret government labs raided, and shit in general be fucked up until the answers are found. Dun, dun, dun! What kind of news source is Newsreel if it can't investigate? Don't get me wrong, I love the show, but it seems sort of crippled at the moment. You've read stories by random reporters from random companies with unknown motives. This is acceptable for normal things when something big is going on, but it just doesn't cut it. When there's something big going on, of course. I'm sure you've gotten into the rhythm of broadcasting every day, and a change in show format is the last thing you want. Well, change is inevitable. Normal news outlets are the exact same way. If a crisis is going on, they throw that format out the window and focus on what's going on. Well, I don't agree with that. I don't agree with focusing on just what's going on because it's distraction. There's always shit happening. If you focus all your attention in one direction, you never know what you're going to miss while you're watching the canary. You could take this one step further by using the squad continuously and make Friday be the day you report on what they came up with while investigating whatever is important at the time. I wouldn't be very good at this, but if you have some hardcore people, it could be put to good use. And that's from Kizzle. Now, I put it to you that an elite team of reporting psychos, I would rather have 10,000 people, you know, brute forcing stories, trying to find details and stuff like that as a search engine, then, you know, one or two people who it's all up to them. I think the whole point of Newsreel is being accountable for your own knowledge. You have to check some all information. You have to submit stories. And the stories I get sent to me, like, believe you me, there's guys out there like, you know, I don't want to use his real name, but I can't even use his online name, but he knows who I'm talking about. Crippled Butterfly Knife or something like that was the latest name. He changes his name every time. But it's, these people are, you know, bloodthirsty, savage Nunes hounds. I mean, you know, these guys, I'd put them up, I'd put the Newsreel crowd, like the people that are going on getting these stories and stuff like that, against routers, you bet. I put them on, well, they're not on the ground in these countries. No, but what if we can just get indigenous populace involved here? You got to understand is that the whole strength of Newsreel is that it isn't just elite. It's everybody. It's everyone. I'm not the leader of this thing. I'm just the piper. I'm the guy who's waving the banner around, a standard bearer, I believe the term was. So, although it's a good idea, and I would encourage people to make elite investigation teams, but I can't control that. You know what I mean? It's got to be, if somebody wants to put together a five-man squad, name their squad, and then send me, you know, this elite report that's almost like an hour-long show or something like that, and they send this to me, yeah, I'll give props to, you know, the last Knights of Knee or whatever the hell they want to call themselves. so that we can get this information out. Of course, I have to have all, you know, online sources so that I can check some of it, put it on my live journal and so on and so forth. So it's a great idea. I'm excited about that idea, but I don't think we should be just, you know, focusing on certain news stories. There's always things happening all over the world, and that's what the major news does. You get like this tsunami. I mean, who gives a shit what's happening anywhere else in the world? Focus on the tsunami. And that's a control ploy. That's totally a control ploy. What about the Sudan? What about the complete and total martial law takeover in Nepal? What about all the tragedies of different things that are going on in Africa? You know, like, and Thailand and Southeast Asia and all that region, they had like a sex trade that was just abysmal and abominable. It was just horrible. You know, the sex trade that was going on there was child prostitution, all this kind of stuff. And it's only because of the tsunami that anybody gives a shit. Which, I mean, that's good. If the house needed to get painted and it got painted, that's great. You know, maybe these people can get some help. But there's lots of people all over the world who are suffering. And that's what, and the news media knows, man, a little charity hides a multitude of sins. So if we focus on the tsunami victims, we get to feel warm and fuzzy about ourselves. While meanwhile in Africa, you know, millions are dying every day with biblical scale famine. So it's a matter of, it's a hard pill to take, I know, but that's really the truth. And the truth is a beautiful thing. Got another one here. You know, Sean, I was listening to today's show, and there's something that occurred to me. So I thought I'd throw it out there. Through you and out into the internet, when you got a letter from that oil worker about capping wells, it hit me. It hit me in the face like a shovel, and I said, oh, my God, they're hoarding it. Now, I haven't done any research to back this up so it's hypothetical, but it is a good idea. Although, maybe the flying monkeys could check it out. Yes, flying monkeys, go and check that. Say you have a resource, and it's good stuff. Nice and easy to work with. So easy to work with, in fact, that everyone wants it. Before long, everything is either made out of it or fueled by it. Then one day, someone realizes, hey, this shit is finite, and we might someday run out of it. Now do you, A, say, ah, fuck it, and just keep going like you're going, saving money in the short run but avoiding the cost of conservation? B, work to find alternatives, eventually freeing the world from the grasp of this resource and those who control it? Or C, conserve your own supply and find ways to draw upon others, such as a commerce or conquest, perhaps even actively work to increase your consumption of said resource from said other supplies until everyone else starts to run out. Then guess who's got all the oil? How after now is that? And that's from Stone Rider. Well, you got to understand that most of the government, you know, what the people in power right now, there's not a lot of touchy-feely, huggy-huggy stuff going on. These people are very much, you know, they look at, you know, things like truth, honor, loyalty, justice, all that. Those are ideals to these people, okay? This is, you know, they live in the throat-slitting, blood-curdling reality of resource management. And it is. It's horrible shit. You know, and people go, well, Sean, on one hand you say we shouldn't be in Iraq, but on the other hand you support the military. Yes. Yes. It isn't just a blanket policy to sit back and go, oh, I hate the Army. No, I don't hate the Army. The Army's a brilliant idea. I believe in a militant society. I think it's a perfect concept, a la Robert Heinlein. But the point is, though, is it has to be run properly. It doesn't matter. Like, I like big convertible cars, but I don't like them driving through playgrounds killing children. Okay? It's not just all or nothing. That's not the way it works. People try to tell you that's what you need to have. It's like the death penalty. You know, some people say, hey, you know, the death penalty is horrible. What if you have the wrong guy? Well, you know, sometimes the death penalty is necessary. That's horrible. That's fucking horrible. And it's horrible that has to happen, but that's reality. That's the way it works, man. That's what you got to do. And people go, well, why do you say that's what you got to do? Well, I mean, there's other options, but we'll get into that. I got a news story about that, so we'll talk about that later. On straight into the news, number one, why cameras are bad, especially when they're used by Big Brother systems. Arlington, Virginia has taken the next step in automated camera enforcement. How frightening is this? Next month, it will expand its use to a boot finder, a camera device that scans license plates of parked cars and compares it against a database of unpaid fines. If the car owner's listed as delinquent, the car can be towed, and if the owner doesn't pay within 10 days, the car is auctioned. So if you've got overdue library books, your car can be towed and auctioned. How do you like that? Currently, Arlington's program focuses on unpaid car and property taxes. The city's one camera has collected $90,000 in March. However, any unpaid fine is fair game. Anything from late park and recreation fees to overdue library books. New Haven, Connecticut, has towed hundreds of cars and collected $500,000 with its boot finder. Bridgeport is ready to get on board as well. The system uses a $25,000 camera mounted in a laptop-equipped minivan and is capable of taking thousands of photos every minute. Excuse me while I get my laser pointer, wait for it to come by, and drop like a 5-watt beam into that camera. Arlington County Treasurer Frank O'Leary told the Washington Times, We're just always looking for new ways to skin the cat. Well, that tells you the mentality of these people. That is precisely why, you know, the laws are only for the little people. I love that, you know. You get these people guilty of insider trading and stuff like that. They get a slap on the wrist. Enron, you know, is that guy doing time? No, ripped off millions and billions of dollars, you know. But, oh, you and your overdue Robert Heinlein science fiction books, yes, we're going to tow your car and sell it if you don't come up with the money in 10 days. Well, where the hell are you supposed to come up with that money? Yeah, you got to get everyone into the jails, got to get them into the prisons, you know, and soon you'll be charged with bankruptcy and all the rest of it. Alex Jones, man, the guy's scary, scary correct. It's just frightening, frightening, frightening stuff. On to the suicide update. The Supreme Court will hear an appeal to the nation's only assisted suicide law, taking up the Bush administration's call to stop doctors from helping terminally ill patients kill themselves. Now, in recently, because of Hunter S. Thompson's death, his suicide, and I've got a story about that today as well, I've been forced to look at some hard issues concerning the suicide solution. And I got that feedback from Roto on my LiveJournal air, and I've been thinking, you know, generally, if you want to check out and you're old enough and you've lived your life, that's your call, I would have to say. I'm not a big fan of condoning suicide myself, but it's really not, it's not up to me, is it? You know, I mean, the joke goes that thoughts of suicide have gotten me through many a night, and it's true, they do. If you think you have an out, just the knowledge that you have an out where you go, eh, well, I could just shoot myself, that makes you feel better. It doesn't make you feel so trapped. Sounds crazy, sounds really weird. But for those of you out there who are listening, you know what I'm talking about. You know when your life is shit, you're like, you know, I could just geek myself and call it a night. And then you think about it for a minute. And the fact you have a chance to go and you're like, nah, I won't bother. I'll just keep fighting. What the fuck? Right? Now, when you get guys like Hunter, do I think he should have geeked himself? No, I think he should have kept fighting. But I guess we've got some news updates on that as well. But I think if someone's in pain and they're living and suffering in pain, you know, maybe their brain isn't working properly. Maybe, you know, that's something to you know, look at. If these guys want to geek themselves, or, you know, if they've gone so far that they're shitting all over themselves and they have the brain capacity of a 4-year-old and they're just like, you know, well, fucking yeah, lights out, Gracie. A lower court had ruled the U.S. government cannot hold doctors criminally liable for prescribing overdoses under Oregon's Death with Dignity Act. Ooh, there's an interesting name for an act. But last November, then-Attorney General John Ashcroft, filed the appeal urging physician-assisted suicide not a legitimate medical purpose. Yeah, well, you know, that whole thing about, you know, not causing harm and stuff, I guess. Also yesterday, the High Court refused to revisit the 1973 Roe versus Wade ruling, despite the appeal from Jane Roe herself and Norma McCorvey. Anyway, meanwhile, a Florida court overturned a lower court order and required continued feeding in the least until today for Terry Schiavo, who's been kept alive since severe brain damage in 1990. Now, I've looked at this Terry Schiavo case. This broad has huge brain stroke. Brain takes a monster cosmic shit. And, you know, she's essentially a turnip, okay? She's laying in the hospital bed. And she's been there in this hospital bed, okay, for the last 15 years. Now, if I was in a hospital bed for 15 years, please, somebody check me out, okay? Because it's time to go. All right, time to fucking leave. Now, if you're in a hospital bed for 15 years and you've still got higher brain function, don't do that. Save my ass. You know, you can just convert me over to the la robotics, you know, a la download. But then there's the question, too, of, like, what about nanotechnology? Is it possible with brain-damaged people they could go in, map the neurons, and bring them back to life or replace the neurons that have been damaged so all of a sudden this person comes out of, like, a cryostasis and their brain is back where it was? There's an interesting thought. So you got to get all the data, and this is when you have to kind of trust the scientists a little bit. You want to stick a gun in their mouth, make sure they don't go, you know, creating any crazy diseases on your ass. But, you know, you got to trust these people somewhat here. Now, parents apparently are relaxing on pot. Now, I love the way they spin this article. Surveyed Tuesday today finds that fewer parents are talking to their kids about drug use, and fewer would be upset if their children experimented with marijuana. Now, they're going to make that look like it's all drugs. According to the survey, a number of parents who have spoken with their children about drugs has doubled, who have never spoken with their children about drugs has doubled in the last 6 years. The 17th annual tracking study of parents' attitudes towards drugs conducted by the Partnership for Drug-Free America also found today's parents were more likely to have used drugs than in previous generations. Well, yeah. While the vast majority of parents have left old habits behind, they're carrying old attitudes and beliefs forward. Oh, can't have that, said Steve Parser, president and CEO of Partnership. If old habits die hard, the data suggests that relaxed attitudes about drugs die even harder. Dun, dun, dun. So if old habits die hard, then, you know, your mentality, you've got to totally get, you know, anal about this whole drug thing. The organization Tuesday also unveiled a new program, Partnering with Families. Ooh, there's just a scary name for an organization, aimed at inspiring parents who become more engaged with the lives of their teenagers, and especially when it comes to drug abuse prevention. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but those of us out there, chances are, those young people out there, you've probably been raised by parents who have no idea who the fuck you are. And the reason why that is because both of them are working. It's not their fault. Your parents love you. You were brought into this world, hopefully, in a loving family. If not, terribly sorry, but that shit happens too. And, you know, here you are. And quite often you feel isolated. You feel alone. And that's why quite often many of you have gone online to seek community. This is just, you know, human fucking nature. And from this, you come across me. And my sorry ass, you know, spouting out my own particular brand of morality, which, you know, is largely based upon, once again, the difference engine. So when you're talking about drugs and stuff like that, you can't just say, no, it's wrong. That's not going to be good enough for kids these days. They want hard data, man. These people are online, and they're getting the data. They're hitting the libraries. That's the way kids are now. They know that information is power. So if you're just going to start, you know, toting, you know, Nazi banners around, you know, and propaganda, that's not going to wash on the next generation. Our challenge is to give parents new reasons to care about drug abuse. Why would you need new reasons? Parents don't want their kids shooting heroin. And new ways to plug into their teens' reality. A reality that is vastly different from the one they experienced as teens. Well, no shit. Because technology in our society is fucked. And we've totally become dominated by the core political state and the fact that our parents are working three jobs just to keep a roof over our heads so they can maintain some sort of standard of life. This is the grim reality of the world we live in. And if you want to do something to help your parents... You know, quite often people go, well, you know, my parents just pissed me off. Maybe if, you know, you wanted to get a little bit further with your parents. Imagine this. Everybody who's got parents living at home, doing the teenager thing. Everyone knows there's shit that the parents want to get done, like doing the dishes and shit like that. If you want to fuck with your parents, start doing that shit. Like, just have a system every morning. Get up, wash whatever dishes are there, dry them, put them away. Don't tell anybody. Okay, they'll be fucked up about that. They won't know what the hell's going on, you know? All you gotta do is do a simple, couple of simple little things around the house and tell them shit like, oh, well, you know, some of my internet people have told me to do that. Wow, suddenly the internet's a great thing. Less vilification. You know, just a thought. Shit like that. Or if you want to take your mom out to coffee once in a while, treat your parents as people, because they are. I mean, you know, it's shitty that they haven't been able to be there as much for you as perhaps they could have. It's shitty they don't have enough money to do the things that you would like to do. But, you know, realistically, we're all in this together, and your family is a lot more important than you fucking think. Take it from me. Now, reasons to breastfeed. Now, this is just a scary, scary story. But, of course, unfortunately, we're not going to be able to... There's later news stories that say reasons not to breastfeed. Reasons to breastfeed. A brand of soy-based formula feed has been recalled in Israel after three babies died, and others were less seriously ill. Now, watch how they spin this so that soy milk is bad. The Remedia milk, sold as kosher formula feed, was lacking vitamin... A vitamin vital to brain development. Thousands of Israeli babies are thought to have been given the feed, which is also thought to be popular in Orthodox Jewish communities in the U.S. Food giant Heinz, which owns a stake in the Israeli firm that manufactures, said it was very concerned. Well, no shit, you're killing babies. There is no firm proof yet of the absence of the vitamin B1 from the feed was the reason behind the deaths and the illnesses. Well, yeah, you can go to court and everyone can get just, you know, fucking beat the shit out of each other with conjecture there. Two of the babies who died had other illnesses that might have contributed to their deaths. You know, this is as good as it's going to get. This is what happens when you have Heinz dumping millions of dollars to put spin. A deficiency of B1 in infancy can cause a condition called beriberi, which can kill. Parents of children given the formula have been urged to take their babies to a doctor for booster shots of the vitamin. Robert Steinberg, an Israeli health ministry spokesman, described the warning issues as a precaution. Yeah, only three kids have died. It's not really that frightening. However, the ministry confirmed that legal action may be taken against the manufacturer, which is carrying out its own investigation. Well, yeah, so you can trust that. If the company's carrying out its own investigation, what do you want to suppose they're going to find out the company's not at fault? You know, reasons to have core political watchdogs for 1,000 Alex. Never mind all of these, you know, surveillance groups and surveillance organizations and... You know, Donnie's new SS group that he can do, you know, extra legal activities. Why don't we just have a few fucking lawyers with a conscience or people who want to stay out of hell, you know, just rabidly attack these companies when shit like this happens? Yeah, your internal investigation doesn't mean shit. We're walking into your company. We're going to look at all of your data and all of your files. And if you fuck around, we will fine you so heavily and ban your products from the world. But of course, the corporations have gained too much power. That's why, really, who's really running the show? Is it the governments or multinationals who are larger than even governments are now? Bear in mind, China's 10th largest training partner is who? Walmart. What does that tell you? Now on to some police violence here. Police opened fire Monday morning with non-lethal bullets at an anti-war protest in Port Oakland, injuring several longshoremen standing nearby. Police were trying to clear protesters from an entrance to the docks when they opened fire, and the longshoremen apparently were caught in the line of fire. Cut loose! Six longshoremen were treated by paramedics. At least one was expected to be taken to hospital. It was unclear if any of the protesters were injured. "I was standing as far back as I could," said longshoreman Kevin Wilson. "It's all very scary. All that force wasn't necessary." Okay, and these are the longshoremen, okay, saying this. Last week, San Francisco-based peace group Direct Action to Stop the War had announced that it would stage a series of protests Monday involving new acts of civil disobedience. Now, these are largely nonviolent shit, you got to bear in mind. The Port of Oakland was among the targets, organizers had said, because at least one shipping company is handling war supplies. Trent Willis, a business agent for the International Longshore and Warehouse Union, which you don't want to fuck with those guys, said angrily that dock workers were leaving the docks after the incident. "They shot my guys. We're not going to work today," Willis said. The cops had no reason to open up on them. The police used non-lethal bullets, sandbags, and concussion grenades to try and break up about 500 protesters who split into groups in front of the terminals. Now, is that really necessary? You know, is it really... Well, they didn't really shoot them. Well, yeah, have you ever seen what beanbag guns do? I mean, this is not... there's a picture of a chick there. And, of course, a lot of these protesters, you know, they're a lot of Jell-O, you know, granola, sprout-eating motherfuckers. So they're not really big. You don't really think of a protester, a war protester, as being, you know, this space marine. You generally think of Twiggy. You know, that's generally what you think of war protesters. They're pretty slender, you know, they got the dreadlocks on the go, they smell like patchouli. You know, that's what they're like. So having a bunch of cops who... Generally, I would pit one cop against three anti-war protesters any day of the week, but when you have a group of cops and all they got to do is just, you know, make sure that no one's getting violent, you know, the protesters are angry about the war and shit, but why are you just going to open fire on them? Were they lighting shit on fire? The article doesn't say nothing about them getting violent. They just cut loose, and for that matter, they fucked up all the dock workers, too. Good stuff. Now, apparently they're trying to reintroduce the death penalty over across the pond. The director of the liberal VVD party's think tank has urged for a reintroduction of the death penalty, claiming it would act as a deterrent to violent crime and gave political voice to a large section of the electorate. Now, I believe this is in the Netherlands. Yes, it is in the Netherlands. Telders Foundation director Patrick von Schie said the constitutional ban on the death penalty should be abolished, allowing the sentence to be imposed for war crimes, terrorism, multiple murder, and exceptionally brutal murders. Okay, well, I'm cool with everything there except for terrorism, because we need to define terrorism. Writing in the Liberal Reveil, Van Schmee claims 40-50% of the population is in favor of Dutch law providing the possibility for imposing death penalty for serious offenses. Based on such support, he said a lively debate about the issue could be expected in a democratic country, but this had not occurred to date in the Netherlands. Van Schmee claims death penalty is taboo among politicians in The Hague, and that anyone who comes out in support of it is immediately out of favor. But the VVD was quick to reject proposed reintroduction of the penalty, with MP Leita, I'm fucking that name up, Leitatia, that's kind of a neat name, if I knew how to say it, Griffith, claiming that Van Schie's suggestion was a personal plea rather than one made behalf of the party's foundation. So they're throwing him the fuck out. Now, on the death penalty, the problem with the death penalty is the death penalty useful? Well, of course it is. Of course it is. But the problem is people go, what if you've got the wrong guy? You know, so that isn't really the problem with the death penalty. The problem is with the investigation and court process, which totally needs to be redone. But honestly, if you've got some evil fucker like, say, Jeffrey Dahmer or Clifford Olson or any of these guys who are like, you know, child killers and stuff, like, you can't reform these fucking people. Now, when you're reforming, that's an interesting term. Let's look at this whole reformation process. So we take this, you know, said bag of shit. Okay, and I don't care how granola-eating you are, you know of people in history who are just bags of shit who need to be taken out. Now, your choice is, A, you can either, you know, kill them dead and cost-effective, which is a horrible thing to say, you know, profits over people, Sean, yeah, okay, well, whatever. But the point is that he's out of the equation now. Bye-bye. Okay. Option B is that you lock him in a cell in a large, you know, facility, zero contact, and they, you know, they just become like these institutionalized vegetables, which I could be argued is more cruel than just shooting the bastard, okay? And then there's option C, which we're going to start seeing very soon, where they're going to start doing neural reconditioning and brain surgery, any way you want to call it, on inmates to make them, you know, able to be reintegrated into society. If you just lobotomize these fuckers, then, you know, they're obviously not going to be a problem because they've got no brain power. that's what they want to do. So I ask you, of those three choices, which is the most humane? Think about it now. Let's say you're not guilty. Okay, let's say you're innocent and you're in jail. Would you prefer to have the death penalty? Would you prefer to, so you just check out, would you rather spend the rest of your life rotting in some cell somewhere? Is that what you'd rather do? Or would you rather, you know, have your brain opened up and some doctor go around and destroy everything that who you were and you come out a totally different person? I put it to you that given those three options, that death is a much nicer option. Now, if there's any question or any doubt, now, when the question here is, when do you use it? And I think it should only be used in confession cases where people are like, yeah, I did it. You know, I'm fucking sick and deranged and I'm all messed up. You know, I'm the night stalker. I'm out there, you know, cutting people up because Satan says he loves me. La, 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 wah! You know, he's crazier than a shithouse rat. Then, yeah, you know, sorry. Thanks for coming out. You get checked the fuck out. And if you admit that these are the crimes and these are what you've done, then, yeah, see ya. See ya later. You get to go. Why? Because you're an evil bastard. You don't kill people because of what they've done. You kill people in court so that they won't hurt anyone else. And, you know, I wouldn't want to set the policy on that, but generally, when it comes to things like child crimes and pedophiles and sexual assault and, you know, the really hideous stuff, then, yeah, you've got to look at that and go, well, you know, because if we let guys out of The Hague or whatever for war crimes, all these guys who wind up in The Hague, these are heavily connected motherfuckers. They're not going to change their ways. You know, they're not going to be like, oh, geez, yeah, I guess I killed all those Serbs. No, you need to check these people out. Otherwise, they're just going to rot inside this cell. I think it's a much more humane approach. Of course, you know, I'm sure I'm going to get a ton of emails saying I'm fucked on this one, but here we go. Now, never mind the soy milk, it seems that breast milk and cow's milk has also been contaminated. A chemical association with rocket fuel, a chemical associated with rocket fuel has turned up in most samples of breast milk and store-bought cow's milk from 23 U.S. states. You're going to hear about this in the news? Not likely. A new study reveals a chemical may disrupt metabolism in adults that lead to the mental retardation in children. Wow, it's not just television, now they're really trying to dumb us down. Perchlorate is a component of fuel for rockets and missiles, and also appears to be made naturally in the atmosphere and stored in the soil. It is widely found in the U.S. water supply and has previously been detected in samples of dairy milk and lettuce. Now, researchers led by Pernudu Dasatoga, which sounds like a H.P. Lovecraft god, Dasgupta, Pernendu Dasgupta, who in his spare time is a Tuggy high priest, is a chemist at Texas Tech University in Lubbock, U.S., have published a first known study of perchlorate in breast milk. They found the substance in each of the 36 breast milk samples taken from 18 states and all but one of the 47 dairy milk samples in the 11 states. The average level in breast milk was 10.5 micrograms per liter, while the average dairy milk was 2.0 micrograms per liter. The companies with the limit of 24, that compares with the limit of 24.5 micrograms per limit in the standard of drinking water. Now, the fact that they allow, you know, 24.5 micrograms of rocket fuel in my drinking water is stuff that makes me want to get a distiller, like, right now. Like, no shit. The new guidelines were drawn up according to the amount deemed safe for the average adult by recent U.S. National Academy of Sciences study, but the NAS reports that safe perchlorate intake limits should be set to about 4 micrograms per liter for a baby. So why don't we just try to eliminate that from our water supply rather than just setting safe levels and shit like that? The NAS study concluded that there is insufficient data to establish a definitive link between perchlorate exposure and neurodevelopmental problems, but animal studies suggest that perchlorate can damage the thyroid, which regulates metabolism. Well, you know, that's nice, rocket fuel in the milk, and in breast milk, that's good, you know. So reasons to fast much, reasons to do the Master Cleanser diet much, I would think so. And more news in the psychedelic medicine. This is great. Now this is the first story I saw on this was when Israel started using weed to treat post-traumatic stress disorder in their soldiers. Because, I mean, any way you cut it, you've got to admit that the Israeli soldiers are a bunch of badass motherfuckers. They're out there in the shit, like, every day. Those people are in a war zone. So these guys are getting messed up. You know, they got a head full of snakes. So they've started giving them weed. But over here, we've decided we're going to get into the really heavy, nasty chemicals. John Halpern clearly remembers what made him change his mind about psychedelic drugs. It was in the early 1990s, and the young medical student in the hospital in Brooklyn, New York, was getting frustrated he could not do more to help the alcoholics and addicts in his care. He sounded off to an older psychiatrist who mentioned LSD and related drugs had once been considered promising treatments for addiction, which is true. Frank Ogden, who I had on my show, he told me all about it. I was so fascinated that I did all this research, Harpin recalls. I went reading all these papers from the 60s and going, whoa, wait a minute, how come nobody's talking about this? Well, that's because there's no money in a cure, pal. Take off the rose-colored glasses, John. More than a decade later, Halpern is now Associate Director of Substance Abuse Research at Harvard University McLean's Hospital. It is on the forefront of revival of research into psychedelic medicine. And if you get anywhere, pal, you're going to lose your license and you'll be drummed right the fuck out. He recently received approval from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, FDA, to give late-stage cancer patients the psychedelic drug. If I'm a late-stage cancer patient, I'll be taking my own drugs. Thank you. MDMA, also known as ecstasy. So now he's feeding them ecstasy. They're using this for war vets, too. He's also laying the groundwork for testing LSD as a treatment for the dreaded super migraines known as cluster headaches. Now, I've never heard of cluster headaches, but they sound fucking nasty. And how this guy, John, is not alone. Clinical trials of psychedelic drugs are planned underway at numerous centers around the world for conditions ranging from anxiety to alcoholism. Well, anxiety, is that really a condition? Scary, scary. It may not be long before doctors are legally prescribing hallucinogens for the first time in decades. There are medicines here that have been overlooked that are fundamentally valuable. These developments are a remarkable turnaround. Scientists first became interested in psychedelic drugs, often called hallucinogens, because of their profound effect on perception, said Abby Hoffman, a chemist, Albert Hoffman, a chemist working for the Swiss pharmaceutical firm Sandoz. After Albert Hoffman, a chemist working for Sandoz, which was the guys who developed acid, accidentally swallowed LSD in 1943. No, he didn't accidentally do it, but you can do some research on this. Hoffman's description of his experiments, which he found both enchanting and terrifying, spurred scientific interest in LSD, as well as naturally occurring compounds with similar effects, mescaline, active ingredient from peyote, psilocybin, and magic mushrooms, DMT, from the Amazonian shaman's brew, ayahuasca. Now, I don't know if DMT is the active ingredient in ayahuasca. I'd want to check some of that, because something in my head saying, whoa, that doesn't seem right. And, of course, who else would you follow a story like that up with, talking about ayahuasca, with Hunter S. Thompson is getting shot again? Yes, good old Hunter. Hunter S. Thompson, the gonzo journalist with a penchant for drugs, guns, and flamethrower pros, may have one more salvo in store for everyone. Friends and relatives want to blast his ashes out of a cannon just as he wished. So he wants to. That's kind of cool. That's what he wanted. We'll see if we can pull it off, said historian Douglas Brinkley, a friend of Thompson's and now the family spokesman. Well, that's cool. Thompson, who shot himself to death in his Aspen area home Sunday at age 67, said several times he wanted an artillery send-off for his remains. Well, that's cool. There's no question. I'm sure that's what he'd want, said Mike Cleverly, a longtime friend and neighbor. Hunter truly loved that kind of thing. Colorado fireworks impresario Mark Williamson said it's doable. Oh, sweet! I'd love to. I would so love to, said Williams, 44, owner of Night Music Incorporated, a suburban Denver and fan of Thompson's writings. Oh, he sounds like a fan. Thompson's wife, Anita, and son, Juan, are looking into the canon scenario, said Brinkley, who has edited some of Thompson's work. Brinkley also said that Thompson did not take his life in a moment of haste or anger and despondency, but probably planned his suicide well in advance because of declining health. Who called that? The author of books, including Fear and Loathing Las Vegas, was in pain from a host of problems that included a broken leg and hip replacement. I think he made a conscious decision. He had an incredible run of 67 years, lived what he wanted, he lived the way he wanted to, and he wasn't going to suffer the indignities of old age, Brinkley said. He was not going to let anybody dictate how he was going to die. So when you look at it that way, yeah, you know, it takes some of the edge off. But And apparently, he also spent the prior weekend of that with his children and his grandchildren. And he would just spend the whole weekend, like, spending time with them and blah, 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 blah. And then he geeked himself on the weekend. But the family claims that they had no idea about it. Whether or not they did, that could just be something they say. But that's what was going on with Hunter. Now, Fox, in charge of the check-ins, the Department of Homeland Security, who just, you know, they do things every day that just marvel my brain. Like, I look at these people and I go, wow. You know, could you have made a worse fucking move here? The Department of Homeland Security has named Claria, an adware maker that online publishers once dubbed a parasite, to Federal Privacy Advisory Board. So we've got an adware company on the Federal Privacy Advisory Board. Does anybody else see a problem here? An executive from Claria, formerly called Gator, will be one of 20 members in the committee. The department said Wednesday, this committee will provide the department with important recommendations on how to further the department's mission while protecting the privacy of personally identifiable information of citizens and visitors in the United States. Nuala O'Connor Kelly, the Department of Chief's Privacy Officer, said in a statement. Claria bundles its pop-up advertising software with ad-supported networks such as Kazaa. Recently, the privately held company has been trying to seek credibility by following its stricter privacy guidelines and offering behavioral profiling to its services to its partners. In an email message to CNetNews.com, Kelly defended the inclusion of Claria, representative to the committee. I'm proud of, supportive, and grateful for those individuals and the public and private sector who are willing to take on the hard tasks, fight the good fight, who surprise us and create fresh, unconventional thinking, and blah, 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 yada, 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 who may change is needed throughout the whole work, yada, yada, personal dedication, lots of rhetoric there. In the past, Claria's pop-up ad software has riled some users who claimed it was annoying, installed without permission, not easy to delete. That's because they're ad-aware. They make money by farming users. Publishers were also irked about pop-up ads for rivals' product appearing next to their own websites. Catalog retailer L.L. Bain sued Gator for alleged trademark infringement. So, you know, you've got to look at this kind of stuff that's happening and go, whoa, why would you be naming, you know, someone from an adware company to your to the Privacy Commission? That doesn't even make sense. You mean to tell me that there's no one else you can get? There's no one else you can find that you think has their shit together enough to do that? I mean, that's just fucking deranged. Come on now. Come on now. Where's the mentality involved with that? I just like to know. You know, I just like to find out where that is. Now, as you know, I'm a big fan of this RFID thing. I just think that's just fantastic, you know, having all these little chips put everywhere that we can, you know, they can just scan us and see where we are. It's like your very own barcode, you know, won't be long before that even gets subdermal. Of course, this is my version of sarcasm. But wait, you know, you'd want to ask yourself the question, you'd want to ask yourself, how could they make RFID any worse? Aside from the fact they want to put it in money and in your clothing and they want to give it to anyone visiting the country in the form of a passport, how could they possibly make RFID any worse? Well, the way they make it worse is by not encrypting it. So you don't even have to crack the RFID passports. They just beam it out openly so anyone with a scanner can now know your intimate interpersonal workings. It's being left wide open despite widespread criticism from security experts that proposed high-tech upgrade to America's passports actually introduces new security risks. The government is declining to encrypt data on the new high-tech e-passports, according to proposed new rules published last week. In response to this outside criticism and some public questioning by one of its own contractors, the State Department delayed its rollout of the chip-equipped passports and hired additional companies to provide prototypes. So, I mean, we might get an encrypted one, but apparently the one that's in the works right now is not even encrypted. Other countries are also wrangling with the issue, as the United States is requiring all 27 countries whose citizens do not need visas to visit America begin issuing e-passports by October. So that would mean America, probably London, you know, everybody's got a, you know, paranoia. Let's just get heavy into the state. We got to know who's coming in. You know, you're knocking on my door. So far, only Belgium has started production, and it's likely that deadline, which was originally October 2004, will be pushed back another year. So we're talking about October of this year. The new passports will include a radio frequency identification tag, a chip that will store all the information on the data page of the passport, including name, date, place of birth, digitized version of the photo passport, including the proposal in the federal... according to the proposal in the Federal Register. So this is all the shit they're going to put inside the RFID chip. Nothing new there. RFID chips are widely used in automatic toll payment systems such as Fast Track or identification chips implanted in necks of pets, which my dog has one of. The chips are activated by reading a certain radio frequency by a reader using certain radio frequency waves, which the chips use as an energy source to send back the encoded information. So it's a lot like a barcode. Border agents equipped with readers would be able to pull up a passport information on a screen and visually compare the digitized photo against the passport bearer. So, you know, conversely, if it's not encrypted, that means that anybody could just pull up your personal data, find out where you live, maybe find out where you traveled from or to. I mean, when you think about the social engineering aspects of this, it's just terrifying, really, how far they could go with something with this kind of potential. I mean, obviously, it should at least be encrypted. I mean, come on now. That's just insanity. And, of course, we're going to get on to our daily hack. Now, everyone was talking about rootkits. Like, what is a rootkit? Rootkit Revealer. This is a free piece of software you can download. And what is a rootkit? A rootkit, the term rootkit, is used to describe the mechanisms and techniques whereby malware, including viruses, spyware, Trojans, attempt to hide their presence from spyware blockers, antivirus, and system management utilities. There are several rootkit classifications depending on whether the malware survives reboot and whether it executes on the user's mode or kernel, without getting too geeked out on you there. Okay, now what is this Rootkit Revealer, which is freely downloadable thanks to SOAB? Rootkit Revealer is an advanced toolkit detection utility. It runs on Windows NT 4 and higher, so XP, all that good stuff, and its output lists registry and file system API discrepancies that may indicate the presence of a user mode or kernel mode rootkit. Rootkit Revealer successfully detects all persistent rootkits published at www.rootkit.com, including AFX, Vanquish, and Hacker Defender. Note, Rootkit Revealer is not intended to detect memory-based rootkits like Foo that don't survive reboots. Now, this is free. It's a free piece of software. So that's why I'm, of course, plugging it, because we like free software. Free software is a good thing. So if you want to make sure that you want to keep your box secure, you want to make sure that you're not getting, you know, owned by, since we've got, you know, a spyware company on the Privacy Commission now, now would be the time to make sure that your box or deck or whatever is locked down. That's all I got for you this week, but Sim and I will be back on Monday to make sure you get all the news you need to survive. This is a free broadcast brought to you by the generous donations of those people whose names, when they were wrote against by the high scorer, will be able to say that these people made a difference in the times of crisis. Those would be Jesse, Anonymous, Jesse, the Grey Ghost, Robert Forleet, Michael, Matthew, Matt, Kevin, Derek, Jesse, Desert Runner, Eric, Speaker, Jeff, Malcolm, Peter, Keith, Timor, WebLife, Richard, Greg, Evan, Matt, Drake, Levi, Ashton, David, Brian, Austin, Tara, Host Mojo, Jonathan, Adam, Mystique, Mark, Jonathan, Trevor, Brandon, Art, Diremude, Peter, Jesse, Brandon, Justin, Matthew, Dylan, Lars, Daniel, Mookie, and Philip. Thank you so much for your donations, guys. I know I don't really get a chance to suck up to you guys nearly as much as I should, but thank you very much for your donations that keep me on the air. And if you would like to help keep this daily news broadcast on the air, please visit rantmedia.ca and click on the donate tab. Every little bit helps. Special thanks to some hard net runners who got me the data. And these are, you know, it's an idea to have a crack, you know, specialist team who's all ninja and stuff like that, but I think I'm doing pretty good with my crowd I got going on right here. And personally, I like the whole idea of people reporting when they want to and not feeling obligated, you know, because life is so hard now. We all know this. Those of you out there who are donating and they're doing what they can, I get the same thing in all the emails. People are saying, you know, I wish I could do more, but this is all I can afford, or I wish I could do more, and that's, you know, sometimes I don't get all the stories, and I'm sorry, Sean, I'm sorry. No, man. You don't need to be sorry. Just do what you can. That's all any of us are doing. I'm doing all I can, you know, and there's people out there who send me the stories and stuff like that. So every little bit's help. This is a community, okay? I'm not the spearhead here. I'm not the guy on the top of the pyramid. We're all a huge marching, advancing line. And those people who help us with this news program and getting the information out, they're just as important as I am and just as important as Sim is. So thank you so much. And that includes Astrofix, Sylvanus, Polysci, Ricky Rocket, Foulware, Psychofish, No Delete, D Sotaku, Mr. Echo, and No Delete. And, you know, also, I give a lot of credit for people who have been around a long time, but just because you haven't been around a long time, don't think that we value you any less. There's lots and lots to do, and now more than ever, we need to get all the newbies we can involved so that we can get them on board, get them on the right track. You know, those of us like Mr. Echo and Roto and Smokehouse and all the guys who've been around forever, we need to make sure we keep these young people in line. Not, well, in line's a bad expression. Probably orientated so they know at least they're getting good data. So you present them with data so they can make their own decisions. And we know what decisions they're going to make because, well, we've been doing this a long time. And eventually they're going to make the same decisions we have because, well, we're right and we know it. Freedom will prevail. No matter what happens, guys, remember that freedom will prevail and life will find a way. I totally believe that. So for all of you out there sending me sending me presents like Tank and people who are donating and sending in news stories, thank you so much. And if you have access to sensitive information or any other pertinent stories, please email them to Newsreel, that's N-E-W-S-R-E-A-L, at rantradio.com. Now, the music in the background today was sent to me from the This is a wild chunk of music, and it's from the High Mayhem Festival. Now, this is something that you can... I've linked to it off my live journal, but I guess it's all about experimental music. And occasionally I get onto the news groups, you know, and I screw around on the news groups and I get, you know, some experimental music, which usually just sounds like... you know, really weird shit. But, I mean, it's valid, and there's some stuff on this disc which I really, really like. And this was sent to me. It's from the High Mayhem Festival of Music 2003. It's a limited production release, which I was like, wow. It's only 1,000 of these CDs made, and I got number 302, which I thought was really cool. So I figured I'd compress it, throw it in the background, and if you want to try to get it, well, you probably won't be able to because it was a limited press release. But definitely, you'd want to go check out this High Mayhem Festival of Music. I mean, if you're in the New Mexico area, or where is this? It's at Santa Fe, New Mexico, and some of the recording artists on here, Max Friedberg, Carlos Senesfan, Andy Smith, Tom Vallejo, Richard Perez, you know, there's a lot of different guys on here. It's a really cool disc, and they sent me a sticker, too, which I put on my laptop, so I'm very, very happy about that. So if you like that, check it out. Mine, that's the 2003, I guess 2005 will be coming up pretty quick here, and because really, music is one of the few weapons we have in this war in of our times. This is really all we've got. We've got to be able to make music, make art, and just keep on keeping on, guys. Maintain. So until tomorrow, that's what Server said. End of line.
Американская фирма Transceptor Technology приступила к производству компьютеров персональный спутник.
Attack, and you don't want that.